And welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt of papanewt.com in Omaha, Nebraska, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of luckymojo.com in Forestville, California, and Conjureman of conjuremanconsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we'll be joined by a special guest, Balkan Diviner of Balkan Diviner on Facebook in Romania, bringing us today's topic on reading playing cards. Afterwards, they'll take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo, conjure, or root work, as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooist of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at form.luckymojo.com and connect with the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to our clients in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man. Miss Cat?
Hi, Papa Newt. Nice to hear your voice. Well, here we are again. And, so I'm going to try to move us along here. I want to see if Balkan Diviner is in the chat, and I don't see him yet. So
it depends on his connection with YouTube.
Ah, okay. Would love to see him, and also Conjure Man, and also Papa Newt. How about y'all get in the chat? Okay. Things here are kind of interesting. I spent last week interviewing people to work at Lucky Mojo. We lost a couple people due to various other jobs and things coming up. There's Papa Newt. And so we've hired two new people. They're going to be starting this next week. Number one is Jordan. Number two is Aaron. So if you call the shop, you might just end up speaking to Jordan or Aaron. And this is going to be good. We're going to be able to get things out faster. I have to train them first, of course, but we're doing well. I spent the last few days working on my Patreon stream. Back in 2010, I wrote a dowsing bibliography. It just was books on dowsing with my little reviews of them. And then in 2020, I started adding photos and more reviews and more books. And then it's now another 5 years having passed. We added about 2 dozen more photos and about 2 dozen more books. And I have finally brought my voice forward. If you thought this was a dowsing bibliography, like a catalog of books, no, it's actually a diatribe about dowsing books. But it's to read it, you have to go through it in alphabetical order, because I don't group the books by what they are about or how much I love or hate them. I group them by the names of the authors. So become a Patreon member, and you can see this new dowsing page. Otherwise, sit on your thumbs for a year, and it'll be free next year. All right. Well, I have some announcements to make. I have the winner for last week's Magic Mondays from Hoodoo Psychics. Every week, Hoodoo Psychics, the world's foremost Hoodoo Psychic line, gives away a free 15-minute reading. In order to win it, you just need to go to Hoodoo Psychics at Facebook or at Instagram and sign up. And if you get selected, you're all shuffled into the system and you get a free 15-minute reading with the reader of your choice. And last week's Hoodoo Psychics contest winner was Standavia Pearl. Okay, then Lucky Mojo gives away free things every Fridays, Facebook Fridays contest. And last week, we had the Gregory Lee White Authors Special. And this consisted of two books, The Stranger in the Cup by Gregory Lee White and Catherine Ironwood, and How to Use Amulets, Charms, and Talismans in the Hoodoo and Conjure Tradition by Catherine Ironwood and Gregory Lee White, a Two Taurus production. And we had three winners, and they were Claudia Ramirez, Steve Hogan, and Patrick L. Cello. Like the instrument, cello. What a nice name. So we've messaged them, and they're going to pick up their free books, and that contest has ended. So stay tuned next week. We'll have another Facebook Fridays contest and another Hoodoo Psychics Magic Mondays. So get your free stuff while you can. And the last thing I want to remind you of, speaking of free stuff, is we are uploading one video per day at YouTube. So if you hear this on a podcast stream or audio stream, which many people do, come on over to YouTube and go to Lucky Mojo Curio Co. channel. And you'll find we are uploading old shows, and I mean old ones, new ones, recent ones, last week's shows, and they come complete with sort of semi-hypnotic looped video pleasure. You can still listen to them as audio, but they're also kind of fun. Andre and Deacon Millet are putting a lot of work into it, so is Nagashiva, and so am I. And we are gaining subscribers. Please subscribe if you find the channel. Okay. How are you doing, Conjurman?
I'm doing quite well. Busy and slightly tired and sleep deprived as usual, but otherwise doing quite well. I was just in my collection of books where I was picking up the book we're going to be talking about today. And Kat, you joked that a man who has so many books that he has a separate room for those books eventually going to need a separate building for those books. And I was like, yes. The Conjurman Library does sound like a good idea at some point. So now I have thoughts of what would I do if I have even more books? Would I buy a whole separate building for this? Because I do have a lot in my room. The room that I have all the books in is getting back. It's actually wall-to-wall, floor-to-ceiling books. And then piles on as I'm reading them. They sort of stack up in piles. So now I'm gonna have to consider maybe a library at some point.
I have run out of walls on which I can put bookcases.
You and I.
And Shiva ran out of walls a long time ago and started putting up islands of bookcases in the middle of the room.
I kind of like the idea of islands of bookcases.
Obviously, it sort of borders on hoarderism, you know. But on the other hand, I can just say, hey, that book over there, I need that one, and it'll be right there. It's especially good if you're a writer. You need books to research.
Yeah, if you're a researcher, if you're a writer, you know, of all the things to hoard, it's one of the better things, I should say.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have with us today a guest coming to us electronically all the way from Romania, Balkan Diviner. Now, I know that many of you who have listened to the show have seen Balkan Diviner in the chat and occasionally speaking at, you know, and being among us, and also at the Lucky Mojo Forum. Balkan Diviner has put in more than one appearance. So today, Balkan Diviner is bringing us the topic and is our guest. And the topic will be divining or fortune telling with playing cards. Mm. All right. Welcome to the show, Balkan Diviner.
Welcome.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be with you today live. Coming all the way electronically from Romania. Yes, so I'm actually excited to present today playing cards as divinatory system. So I've been a playing card reader since pre-teenage years, and the beauty of playing cards lies in their simplicity. They're also affordable and widely available. I've learned reading the playing cards from an Italian-American reader whose grandmother worked as a psychic at tea rooms in New York City.
Wow. So it's really the Italian-American method. Now, for those who are old cartomancers, the Italian method is one of those things. I think the Italian method first appeared in books on playing card reading back around 1850. And I remember getting my first old book, I think it was Marchand's Wheel of Fortune, and I opened it up and the book cracked open naturally. The spine had to crack, you know, and it cracked open and it said, the Italian method. And I just burst into laughter. I was like, what have I gotten into here? I was a teenager too. And this type of reading goes back so, so long. It really is an old style of reading. There are many things that make card reading part of the folkloric, folk magic of many European nations. Mm-hmm. And I particularly want to stress here that we are not talking about tarot decks or oracle decks, but regular playing cards, the kind you could get like B brand or bicycle brand or any of those. And also, if you look at the picture that we put up for the placard, those are European playing cards.
Mm-hmm.
And they are marked in German because the Jack is marked with the letter B for Bube, which means boy. And these are small cards that are called patience cards. They're for playing solitaire or for reading. They're very small mini decks. If you've never had a patience deck to read with, you owe it to yourself to get one. They're amazingly easy to handle. So that's all I have to say about that. So, Balkan Diviner, you're fairly young, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So you started reading these cards in your teens?
Indeed, in my pre-teenage years, actually.
Pre-teenage, okay. And so do you read for people professionally in Romania?
Not exactly, but I've read for people in my social circle before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you read online around the world?
For the moment, I haven't done a proper business in this area. I'm more of an aspiring diviner.
Mm-hmm. And so now is the point when Conjurman and Newt and I say, what's your sign of the zodiac?
I'm a Leo.
A Leo. Okay. We want you to get a business card.
Yes.
We're all Tauruses.
And, but interestingly enough, both are fixed signs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes, all fixed. But we Tauruses, we joke on this show how many Tauruses are on the air today. You know?
Tauruses and Capricorns.
Tauruses and Capricorns.
Capricorns. Those are the these are our shows, and those are our business card people.
Yeah, right. So you need a business card, sweetheart. All right. Well, take us away and tell us how you approach this. And especially, I think people want to learn about, you know, how this is done in Europe and how reading playing cards for people proceeds as a system of divination. So take it away.
Thank you. So there are 52 playing cards used in divination, but it's actually important, in my opinion, to mention the Joker. Now, to my knowledge, many people don't actually use the Joker, myself included, and it has a disputed origin. The Joker actually comes in two, one's red and one's black. One can represent unexpected surprises, either good or bad. But the Joker can also be a sort of the fool and represent innocence, recklessness, and new beginnings. It's also important to remember that another interpretation of the Joker is that of surprises. And it's also crucial to understand that many people in Europe tend to like to consecrate cards before using them. Now, as I've mentioned, playing cards are so widely available. I only go to the local shop and they hand me a playing card deck wrapped in foil. I don't even know exactly the company which manufactured them, to be honest. I usually tend to pray over them in the beginning. There are also others who prefer incense. And I'd like to add that an Italian superstition says when a deck starts to misbehave or you cannot connect with the deck, you can bury it underground for a whole night to be grounded under the moon's influence.
Wow. Wait a minute. I want to hear more about that. I know what you mean about when a deck misbehaves. So you bury it in the dirt. Do you wrap it up in something?
Yes, that's correct. So you wrap the deck in a brown paper bag and you bury it in the ground before moonrise. You have to retrieve the deck once the moon has set again the following day.
Fascinating. Wow. That is really interesting.
That's completely new to me. Wow. Okay, and you dig it up again before the moon rises again. And then it'll, this is so interesting. You know, Balkan Diviner, you've opened a whole little window here onto burying statues of Saint Joseph and punishing saints. You know what I'm talking about, Conjure Man?
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole tradition of, you know, getting a saint to come through faster, for example. Mm-hmm. The saint is into, I mean, I personally wouldn't recommend it, but there definitely is a tradition that exists about, like, you know, taking the hand from Saint Anthony or burying Saint Joseph in order to sell a house.
This is the no-nonsense approach to magic and folk traditions and folk religion and folk fortune telling. If they don't obey, you're going to bury them until they do better. That's great. I never heard that one before. And that's really sweet. It's really, really good. All right. So you consecrate the deck by praying over it. Now, I know someone's going to ask, because you come from a far distant land, what do you pray? How would you pray over a deck to consecrate it?
Yes, so in my culture, I actually pray to the Holy Ghost to consecrate the deck. But you can also pray, there are different variations. You can also pray to your ancestors or spiritual guides or angels and so forward.
Okay, so you can pray to other spirits if you wish to. I'm most interested in you, though, because, you know, having you here on the phone is like catching a rare fish in a net and talking to it before we let it go back to the sea, you know? So I know that people who will pray to their own personal saints or their ancestors over any deck, there are others who never pray over a deck to consecrate it, but they will instead work in what I would call a more secular style, taking the deck of cards and fanning it over incense smoke that might be like psychic vision incense smoke. Do you have any system, Conjureman?
Of consecrating decks? Yeah, a little bit. It wasn't growing up. We had a lot of card readers in the area that I lived in, and I interviewed quite a few of them. Not all of them consecrated. It's not like unheard of in Southern Conjure, but it's also not the most common thing to do. Most of the time you get stories about the type of cards you get. Like, you want to be a gifted card deck, or a card deck that you only use for readings, you don't use to play, you know, solitaire with or whatnot. So there's certain like traditions that are associated with it, but not a lot, for example, of consecration. The one that I do know of, for example, that comes from North Carolina, is that you're supposed to let your playing cards sit on the Bible for a period of time. And then some people say it has to be overnight, and some say it's for 3 days. But what it does is that is to ensure that only truthful spirits will come through, no lying spirits will come through the cards.
Okay, that's a good one too. Now, I know another way to work that I was taught. This is more what I would call hoodoo style, but it also comes out of gambling, and that is to powder your deck. And so there's a lot of gamblers like to, especially back in the days when playing cards were made of paper. They were not plastic coated, and they were not made of plastic. So they would get, you know, absorb sweat and things like that. And in order to keep a deck able to be shuffled or fanned, you used what used to be called fanning powder, which is just a very fine powder. And you would put that on the cards and then fan them, and so they could slide smoothly. It just produced a gentle surface on the cards. So I learned from readers who read playing cards who used either regular fanning powder, or they would use a sachet powder mixed with the fanning powder for like psychic vision powder or clarity powder or something like that, or money drawing powder if they were reading for people and wanted to get paid. So powdering the cards is very old school. You can still buy paper cards. They're not all plastic. And the plastic ones, you don't need to use any kind of powder on them, but it's just an old way of working.
Yeah, 100%. We should just briefly mention, before we go too far, a little bit of the history of the playing cards, because they have a much older history in Conjure than tarot cards do.
Yes.
So
as far as
we know, playing cards come from China. They then become popularized in Mamluk Egypt, and mm-hmm. then they make their way into Europe, where they become the basis, of course, of the tarot and the playing card deck. Mm-hmm. The tarot was also a card game initially. Mm-hmm. The Tarocchi work was a card game. There's no evidence of a sort of ancient tarot system in ancient Egypt. It is from Egypt, just not ancient Egypt. It's from medieval Egypt. And then there's sort of three big families of card reading styles. There's the Italian, as Ms. Kat mentioned. There's the French, and then there's the German. These are the three big schools, and there's a bunch of smaller schools. As far as we know, the Egyptians did use them as a divination system, but as a solitary divination system. You asked yes or no questions. It's called fall. You'd ask yes or no questions, and then you try to answer it yourself with the playing cards. But Europeans developed the system of reading for others using playing cards. And mm-hmm. once we start to see the mixture of European culture, African-American spirituality, particularly West African and Central African, along with indigenous herbal system is in conjure, we see playing cards picked up. Almost all of the root doctors and root women that I grew up with read playing cards. Mm-hmm. Only my teacher read tarot, and everyone remarked on how weird it was. So in my region, like, everybody read playing cards. It was the most common, along with raccoon bones and similar, like, those were other divination systems or reading directly from spirit. But when it came to cartomancy, people thought playing cards. So the tarot, which has become associated with some hoodoo readers nowadays, is actually relatively new. Playing cards are much older, and Kat can attest to this. She has really amazing images, even, of Black card readers performing and reading for white clientele, Black clientele, and it stretches really at the heart and origins of hoodoo.
There's a reason that I think that this became such a popular method of reading in the Black community. There was also, at the time, a real rise in popularity of gambling games involving playing cards. Coon Can was one of them. And of course, a poker, different forms of poker than we use now, mostly five card draw. But there were other forms of games, euchre, mm-hmm. which used a limited deck. And so these games were very, very popular. Later in the 20th century, bridge became popular. And so these cards were everywhere, and everyone knew about them. I, like you, and I'm older than you, Conjurman, the first people I saw who did card reading read playing cards.
Yes.
And these were African-Americans in California. But I learned Tarot very young from a woman who was from Louisville, Kentucky, mm-hmm. who was a white woman, Mrs. Hare. I've often mentioned her. She read both playing cards and Tarot, and she did numerology. She mm-hmm. was an all-around reader, and she had a library of books about different methods of fortune telling. So this was more than just a job for her. It was also a pursuit, a study for her. Mm-hmm. But she read playing cards quite a lot of the time, and she would read tarot. It would just be whatever she felt, what she wanted to do, or what that client seemed to pull out of her. But the older methods of reading playing cards in the Black community that are attested by folklorists interviewing people, one of the oldest methods is called cutting cards.
Yeah.
And cutting cards is not the same as doing a layout. You just simply cut the deck, and you might cut it three times and get three cards, or you might just cut it once. And cutting cards was used a lot, and you'll find it attested to in old blues songs and things like that, that it's connected with hoodoo, with gambling, and with women. And this is a very old way of thinking about it. Very different than modern ideas of tarot as being a spiritual journey and mm-hmm. Joseph W. that fucking Nazi Campbell. You knew what I was going to say.
I saw it coming.
You saw it coming.
Rightly so, though. Rightly so. For people who actually know, like, what his beliefs were. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So all of that kind of layer had not happened yet when I was young. And so to me, the way that I was taught to read cards, it kind of depended on what kind of an answer you wanted. In other words, if you wanted a yes-no answer, you could just cut the cards to black or red. Do you do that, Balkan Diviner? Do you do card cutting by color?
Yes, definitely. Playing cards are fairly easy to comprehend on basic terms. So there are four suits, hearts, clubs, diamonds, and spades. But in the beginning, reading always commences with noticing the predominance of color. And usually the lines are in odd numbers. So you have three cards. If there is a predominance of red cards, that would indicate a possible positive answer. Whereas black would represent or highlight obstacles to be overcome.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And the way I was taught it is three red cards is yes. Two red cards and one black is maybe yes. Two black and one red is maybe no. And three black, no. And that's the answer to your question.
Very same technique. Same technique is found. And the card cutting was the most popular spread. Like actual card spreads came a little bit later. And you do see it, but generally it was still... It's pretty simple. You don't have as elaborate as, for example, tarot spreads. And this is a tarot influence, which people started to use more and more spreads.
Yeah.
The card cut is by far the most common that we saw growing up. And then a couple people would do, like they did, they do a three-card cut, and then they would add like an outcome. They'd add like a fourth. Like, right, this is your outcome. Yeah, this is your outcome. And that would be like really, you know, like that's a spread.
I'm just going to throw another one before we move on from color. There's another method in which you take a whole deck and you ask a wish, and you want to know if the wish will come true. And you just turn over the cards one at a time, and all you're looking for is the first ace. And if the first ace that comes up is red, you get your wish. And if the first ace that comes up is black, you will not get your wish. So that's a color one. What about the suits in Romanian card reading? How do you read the suits, Balkan Diviner?
So yes, it's important to remember that playing cards not having pictures actually rely on the combination of suits and numerology. So each suit is characterized by the four elements. Hearts are linked with love and emotion or creativity, and they are governed by the water element. They also biologically represent blood and the creation of life. Spades, on the other hand, represent obstacles and opposition, and they are associated with the element of air. And in my system, however, many people would say diamonds would be associated with earth because earth represents money. But in my system, diamonds are igniting and they are the sparks. Therefore, they are associated with fire. They are the money and success suit, but governed by the fire element. And finally, clubs denote progress, work, or development, and they are clearly tied to the reliability and practicability of the earth element. Okay. Now, as I've mentioned, in cartomancy, we often also look to numerology and combine the meanings. So, for instance, the aces can represent a beginning or an ending, due collaboration or conflict, and so forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I'm gonna go a little farther with those the suits just before we go into the numbers. These different attributions of the suits vary from reader to reader, from country to country. The book Deck of Spells by Professor Charles Porterfield mentions that the suits are also used to be associated with different castes of society. So the hearts would be the priest, the clubs would be the poor, the diamonds would be the merchant class, and the spades would be the soldiers or military class. So it's another way to look at them. And then going on with the numbers, I agree with you on one and two. Three often is the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And it can also be just good cheer, pleasure. Mm-hmm. Four, we usually, at least around where I would learn, four represents the house or the home. And it can also be the bed, the marriage bed, or the four seasons, or the four evangelists. Mm-hmm. And five is the five spot. It also can represent an orchard of trees. Mm-hmm. So, Balkan Diviner, do you have anything for six, seven, and so forth?
Yes, I also want to give credit to Dr. Leo Martello, who wrote a book on playing cards, which is called It's Written in the Cards. So Leo Martello, who was a parapsychologist and writer for the Psychic Observer, provided insightful advice and info on numerology. There is a legend actually called the Soldier's Almanac. Do you know?
Oh, yes.
Yes. So there is a man who goes by the name Richard Middleton, a soldier who was attending divine service, and instead of pulling out a Bible, he spread a pack of playing cards on the table. And under interrogation, he mentioned how the ace, as you said, symbolizes one God, the two, Father and Son, three, the Holy Trinity. The six, for instance, days he created heaven and earth, the 7 days when he rested, eight people were preserved from the plague, nine lepers cleansed by our Savior, and 10 commandments.
Yes, we have that too. And it is... it is very, very wonderful. There are songs about this. It is an old thing called the Soldier's Bible, an old poem or song. But there was a man named T. Texas Tyler. And in 1948, he recorded a song called Deck of Cards. The man with a million friends was T. Texas Tyler, and he recorded the Deck of Cards. And I cannot do it justice, but it begins, "Friends, this is T. Texas Tyler with a strange story about a soldier boy and a deck of cards." And it just goes on for, and then does exactly the same thing, which Leo Martello traces back hundreds of years. And I know, because I was that soldier. So you didn't know that, how popular that is in America.
We can also mention what Porterfield says for 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, just so we So 6, sure. He says, is the road, path, and travels. Mm-hmm. 7 is a bump in the road and deadly sins. 8 is the harvest, and 2 against many, twice 4, wisdom increased. 9 is the courtroom, the general and his troops. And 10 is the finish, the highest, and completion. So now you have from ace to 10, according to Porterfield.
Right. And these are, interestingly, you know, the numerology, for instance, for 7, he said the 7 deadly sins, but they're also the 7 heavenly virtues.
Yes.
So these things are interpreted according to what the question is.
And the context that it appears in.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I just want to mention something. I've talked about it before, called cutting aces. And this is something I learned from Mrs. Hare, and it's how to use ranked cards in divination. So you need a standard deck of 52 playing cards without jokers. You ask your question, shuffle the deck, and you lay down the first 13 cards, and you look to see how many aces turn up in the first 13 cards, which is quarter of the deck. And if you have 0 aces, no. If you have 1 ace, you get a weak yes. 2 aces, a strong yes. 3 aces, a powerful yes. But if you get 4 aces, it'll be yes, and it will be better than you could have ever imagined.
Oh, that's very cool.
But if there are no aces in the first pile, you attempt a second pile. 0 aces, really no. 1 ace, maybe, if you overcome obstacles and delays. 2 aces, things will be all right if you overcome obstacles and delays. 3 aces, a weak yes if you overcome obstacles and delays. 4 aces, a solid yes if you overcome obstacles and delays. If there are no aces in the second pile, you can attempt a third pile. 0 aces, no, and it will end in disaster. 1 ace, obstacles, delays, and oppositions, and if you get it, it will be worthless to you. 2 aces, obstacles, delays, and oppositions, and if you get it, you will not want it after all. 3 aces, obstacles, delays, and oppositions, and if you get it, it will be worth less than you hoped for. 4 aces, obstacles, delays, and oppositions, and if you get it, you will at least break even on it. And that's it. That's the way of cutting aces that I learned from Mrs. Hare.
Oh, that's very cool. There's a similar technique, not exactly, but it's specifically for finding out if someone likes you or not, and if you'll end up in a relationship with this. I was taught this by Mama J, who's I studied with and interviewed were learning the roots. And what you do is you shuffle the deck of cards, and then the client has to cut the cards three times. They select a pile, and then they look through the pile for the first court card. So if they get a queen, a king, a jack, etc. If it happens to be red, then yes, the person likes you and you'll end up in a relationship with them. If it happens to be one of the black cards or the courts, it means no, that person doesn't like you. You can then shuffle again, and then cut it three times, pick one of the three piles and look through it once more, this time interpreting which of the court appears. So not looking at the actual colors, but looking at the court. And if you get the page, it indicates that you will have a young romantic love tryst. If you get the queen, that means that you will probably end up, or you know, in a solid relationship with someone who may be more experienced. If you get the king, it is an indication that the relationship will not go through or will end in divorce. So there's a sort of interesting two ways that it's done, working first with the colors and then working second time with the actual images or figures.
That's really good. That's a good one. These ways of working with the court cards are interesting to me. And one of the reasons, and I said we weren't going to compare tarot with playing cards, but I'm going to say one thing here, break my own rule. One reason that I switched to tarot from playing cards was because there are four court cards in tarot. I'll just leave it at that. That gives you more to choose from. But I didn't like that the jack was always a boy, you know. I was a girl, and there was no jackass or princess. So, however, there are, of course, people who can make that leap and understand that the jack would be a young girl as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. I wanted to ask both of you, in addition to sort of the three-card cut, how do you use playing cards? Is it just the three-card cut? Do you use them in spreads? Or do you bring over some tarot components into your actual card readings? How does, like, if a client were to come to the Balkan Diviner or was to come to Miss Cat, what would they see as you pulled those cards? Would they see three cards laid out? Would they see 15 cards laid out? Would they see the Wheel of Life? What does it look like for a client?
I'm going to answer that real quick. One reason I do the three-card cut with tarot is because I learned it with playing cards.
Right.
So I'm a primitivist. However, I really do like the layout called the Method of 15. And perhaps someone can put this through in the chat. There was a set of trading cards that came out in England that described how to use the Method of 15 illustrated with pictures of playing cards. And I really like that. It's sometimes called the Cross of 15 or the 15 Cross, lots of different names for it. But I like that method. The other one that I use, the third method, is the Wheel of the Year or the Circle layout or the Wheel method, where you use 12 cards for the 12 houses of a horoscope. So that's my answer. How about you, Balkan Diviner?
Yes. So actually, I use five cards or six cards. I either use a five-card line instead of the traditional three-card line. And in another cases, I also focus on the answer spread, which uses six cards that are read in columns. Now, because we've talked about numerology, I also want to add that playing cards can also be read by card multiplies. So for instance, I look if I have similar numbers popping up. So two aces would represent strength and determination, but four aces would speak about major changes that affect every area of life. Or as another example, the number three is actually considered the most spiritual inclined number of the deck. It can represent either the Holy Trinity or the Black Trinity, or it can also represent building a financial plan. And I also want to talk about face or court cards, because in my system, they can be tricky. So usually, indeed, court cards can represent people. But how can you figure out if they are people or concepts? Usually, when court cards are people, they go by stereotype. So the Queen of Clubs would be the businesswoman. The Queen of Hearts would be the lover or the mother. The Queen of Diamonds would be the businesswoman. And the Queen of Spades, the widow or the enemy. Now, back in the past, there was actually a stigma around widows. That's why it is associated with the Queen of Spades. But the court cards can also incorporate symbols and concepts. So jacks are messages, thoughts, or beginnings or endings. Queens can be nurturing or femininity as a concept, and kings indicate leadership and mastery or the lack of knowledge.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting too. We did get the URL in the chat for the playing cards, the fortune-telling cigarette cards by Edwards, Ringer, and Big. So you all can learn the method of 15, which I actually added a lot of description to it because I know it's a little complicated to see it just on trading cards. But this picture shows everything about it. And that brings up another thing from British card reading, and that is the wish card. So Tarot does not have a wish card, but in British card reading, the Nine of Hearts is called the wish card. And where it comes out in a large layout or whether it comes out at all, the reader is to say to the client, this is the wish card. I'd like you to make a wish, but don't tell me what it is, because if you do, it'll never come true. Just remain silent about it and think about it while I continue with your reading. And when you get to the end, you say, did you make your wish? And they say yes. And you say, now don't tell me, but I got the wish card, and that means your wish will come true. And that's the Nine of Hearts. And it's always done that way in British card reading and American British card reading, but I've never found that used in Tarot with the Nine of Cups.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
Yeah, I put it in with the Nine of Cups, although many people say, why isn't it the Ten of Cups? It's a rainbow coming true. But it's the Nine of Hearts is the wish card. And in that page that we pointed you to, the fortune-telling cigarette cards, it explains how to read the wish card also.
Hmm.
Do you have anything like a wish card, Balkan Diviner?
Yes, and it's exactly the Nine of Hearts. But I've also been taught that the Nine of Hearts can represent a deeper wish on the subconscious level and not always what you immediately expect. There are actually two wish cards in my system. We have the Three of Hearts, which is the small wish card that comes on the short term, and the Nine of Hearts, which speaks about the long term better for our situation wish.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah, we just have in Anglo-American reading, and which is also, you know, corresponds with hoodoo reading. I don't know anyone who uses the Three of Hearts as the small wish. I like that. Maybe I'll start thinking of it that way. It's a very pleasant idea. And the Nine of Hearts is the large wish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that. I learn something new every day.
Yeah, I was not familiar with the wish card or the three being used that way, but that it makes perfect sense, right? With the three hearts and the nine, that makes a nice little balance there. It also has a sort of astrological component between lesser and greater, Venus versus Jupiter. That's the idea of smaller wish, bigger wish. So it's a
one thing that's very important in card reading is to build a rapport with the client.
Mm-hmm.
And these little things like having a wish card and so forth are important. I'm going to ask you, Balkan Diviner. Now, I know that in Tarot, significator cards are very important. In playing cards, some people do use a significator card and some do not. In Lenormand, there is the gentleman and the lady and so forth. Do you use significator cards or just read straight?
I use significator cards when I read the crossroads spread. So the crossroads spread is used when someone is torn between two decisions or two paths to follow. And the significator in this case is the Ace of Spades, which is the troubled mind. Significators can be used in readings. The mentor who taught me had sometimes used them, but they are not necessarily compulsory. And in my opinion, I prefer to have the whole 52 cards that I can pick up from.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rather than excluding one right away.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. That's a new one also that I've never heard before. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I get it. I like it. And I understand it. One of the things that card readers love is to learn other card reading systems and saying, can I see myself using that? One of the layouts that I like a lot is the one where you call the cards past, present, and future. This would be a three-card cut for past, present, and future. But another one that I like is to call it the problem, the short-term solution, and the long-term solution. Sometimes that's more appropriate when reading these cards. Mm-hmm. Now, I know people are going to ask also about timing. And so I'm going to jump into timing by colors and suits. Again, and I want you to jump in on this, Balkan Diviner, if it's different for where you are. So the two colors relate to day and night. Red is day, black is night. And then you can go by the number, like the Three of Hearts would be the third hour of daylight. Or you can go by suits. The clubs are spring. The hearts are summer. The diamonds are autumn. And the spades are winter. Also, there are 52 weeks in the year. And each of the 13 cards in a suit is linked to an exact week in its season. For instance, the five of spades is the fifth week of winter from January 18th through 24th. And this use of cards for timing is very popular among old readers. Most young readers don't ever want to do timing. And another method that Professor Porterfield mentioned, which was unfamiliar to me, I learned it from him, that diamonds can mean minutes or hours, clubs can mean hours or days, hearts can mean days or weeks, and spades can mean weeks, months, or years. So the two of clubs would be 2 hours or 2 days. And then, of course, the last method of timing is the zodiac signs. So this depends on what element you assign them to. If you assign clubs to fire, then those would be the signs of Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius. If you assign hearts to water, it would be Cancer, Scorpio, and Pisces. If you assign them to different elements, you would get a different number of them for them. But you know, I really like the idea of timing with cards. And I also am well aware that many modern readers don't want to do that. So how do you use the cards for timing, Balkan Diviner?
I use the cards to timing by actually looking at the suits, but it's not something I do often either. So in my system, diamonds are the fastest because they represent energy in set in motion. Diamonds could represent hours at most. Now, clubs, they are usually hours or days. Hearts, which are slow, are weeks or months, and spades can be months or years. Now, in a reading, I usually lay out, let's say, five cards in a line, and I look at the predominance of the suits. But I've also been taught that spades have the stronger influence in this regard. So a spade always slows the timing.
It's funny because in the system that I was, so it's actually slightly the reverse. The spades are the fastest, followed by the clubs, then the hearts, and the slowest are the diamonds because they're associated with elements. Mm-hmm. The diamonds are associated with earth, which is considered to be slower. But that just shows you the sort of different regional and cultural variations, each one being valid in their own right.
There are cultural differences, you know.
There are also cards associated with timing specifically. For example, in my system, the two of hearts represents you desire or good news will come to you in 2 weeks or 2 months at most. Mm-hmm. And the 10 of hearts represents summer, whereas the 10 of spades, winter.
Mm-hmm.
Because tens are about changes and completion.
Right.
New beginnings.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I see that in my reading of playing cards, I've also been influenced by Tarot. So I can't unsee that Tarot card image that goes with them. And it always frustrated me when I learned Tarot that it wasn't as logical as playing card divination. It's rather random when you start thinking about it. And playing card divination is much more logical. It's really suitable for readers who like an orderly system that you could literally put on an Excel spreadsheet. It makes it easier to learn than Tarot. But on the other hand, Tarot is very well adjusted to people who have visual learning, who see a picture and they just read it, but they often make up their own stories. It's like a thematic apperception test. Whereas with playing cards, you have no picture. You have the number, the color, the suit. That's it. That's what you've got. Mm-hmm. And so it lends itself better to those who are fixed sign people who memorize things easily. And, you know, there are relationships between playing card reading and domino reading, for instance, that make a lot of sense if you do them both, and dice reading. So numerology is a great part of playing card reading that we don't really see in Tarot. Would you agree with that, guys?
Absolutely. And there's also a beautiful, elegant simplicity to, I think, the playing cards that allows for like very quick answers that are matter of fact, whereas the tarot can sometimes be very open-ended, right? Like the answer you get is not, it's not that it can't be concrete, but there's an open-endedness because it's narrative by nature. Whereas the playing card decks are about getting right to the answer. So there you'll get yes or no's, get very clear cut answers. And so there is a logical flow there.
Yeah, there's something else I wanted to mention too about when to read playing cards. So people have rules, and some have more rules than others. And I was told when I was young by Mrs. Hare, don't read playing cards on a problem more than once a week. And where did she get that information? Somewhere in Louisville, Kentucky, because that's where she came from. And she was very firm about that. Don't read playing cards more than once a week. There are African-American traditions in which you stay up late at New Year's and you turn one card for the new year. And that will tell you what the new year will be like. And there's an old song that Memphis Minnie recorded back in 1941 called Don't Turn the Card. And it was about this method of divination and how she and her lover were having problems. And I'm not going to read the whole song, but it starts off 19 and 30. I pulled the ace of clubs. You said you'd make me happy if I get you up out the mud. 1934, you pulled the little black deuce. You said, kiss me, darling. That means my love is true. 1938, you pulled the queen of hearts. You say, I was born for you. Now, why are we got to part? Now, it's 1942. I pulled the ten of spades. Now, since you wrecked my life, you'll tell it to your grave. So, that's a love affair in several cards. Do you have a tradition of using playing cards on a certain day, like at New Year's or Christmas in Romania?
Yes, I actually at midnight on New Year's Eve draw one single card for the whole year. I can do this either with the playing cards or with the tarot. Now, you've mentioned, and I want to add, that in some Italian superstition, the Ace of Spades can be read in reverse. So upright, it would mean only anxiety that troubles the mind, whereas the reverse, it would mean death. Because well, the Ace of...
Yeah, we call the Ace of Spades the death card.
Yes, exactly.
I want to share real briefly a method that comes out of the Middle East with playing cards. It's very common. My grandmother uses this, I should say, And she came from a long lineage of spirit workers, and it's actually very likely believed to be the origins of the Mamluk divination system known as Fall. And it's very similar to solitaire. What you do is you create piles of cards, and you ask a yes or no question, and then you create piles of cards, roughly about seven of them, and then you try to solve it by putting them into sequential order. So you go from 10 to 9 to 8 to 7 and so on and so forth. And how fast you resolve this, how fast you complete these piles, gives you the answer of how quick this thing will come to be. If you're able to resolve it, it gives you a yes. Whatever your question is, will I get married to so and so? You're able to resolve the deck, that gives you a yes. You're unable to resolve the deck, that gives you a no. How long it takes and how, you know, which pile emerges first over others will reveal to you the type of prayers that you need to do, the type of talismans that you need to make, etc., in order to get the yes that you're looking for. So it is a yes or no. It's generally done by the self. It can be done for someone else, but frequently it was done for yourself. And it was the key to why my grandmother seemed all-knowing and all-seeing, because she would just sit there for hours getting these sort of yes, no's, and basically knew everybody's business as a result of it.
That's amazing. My grandmother, this would be my Ashkenazi Jewish grandmother. The reason I picked those patience cards up there to put on the placard, she played patience every morning. She would set up and play the game of patience. And this is a four-row set where there's certain rules for moving them. If you look it up, you'll figure out how to play it. Use very small cards. She bought me a patience deck, too. My grandmother played the stock market.
I wonder if she was divining, was she?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Ah, she would cool. say if she could make it go, she would allow herself three resets, you know, down below a certain point, reshuffle. But if you had to go for three resets, no use playing the stock market, just complete the task of the solitaire task. But if she got through the whole thing and it was, she'd say, today's a good day for me to go trade stocks. And she was all about lucky and unlucky. She didn't have very many questions about life, just was she lucky or was she unlucky? And if you can complete the patience game, you are going to be lucky on that day. And she did it every morning.
Now, was this your Italian? Was this
Italian? No, not my Italian. No, this is my German Jewish grandmother.
Your German. Now, I wonder if that's a wider Ashkenazi practice. Because we know the Sephardim have it. Yeah. A very similar technique.
Yeah.
We can find it. So I wonder if it came there or if this is a wider Ashkenazi. It would be really cool to do like a comparative.
I'd sure like to know. No, my Sicilian North African grandmother didn't play cards at all. But I think, you see, now my grandmother Ida came from a family of Nobel Prize winning mathematicians. So it was partly a math thing for her too. Okay. I mean, she loved to play the stock market. She loved to be lucky. But for her, lucky is basically playing the odds better than anyone else, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, but what she was conveying to me, and I mean, she really did convey it to me, is if you can get through an entire game of solitaire in one stroke without having to reshuffle or reset, you are on a roll. Now go buy stocks. You see?
That's good wisdom, actually.
Yeah.
It really is.
So that, but it is interesting. Sometimes it was so interesting to me, Conjurman, how you and I, coming from very different cultures from different parts of the world, although they all kind of originate in the Mideast and spread, yours spread to the east, mine spread both north and southwest, they all come down to some very similar ideas.
They do, yeah. I think it speaks to two things. One, there are cultural commonalities that go across regions, right? Mm-hmm. There's just things that you find. Hospitability, you know, and how to be mm-hmm. hospitable to people, etc. But there's also the basic human condition, right? Like mm-hmm. humans are curious about things. Humans want to know if they're lucky that day or they're unlucky that day. And that's mm-hmm. like a universal reality. And as something that, like, as academics and historians and folklorists and anthropologists all note, is that even cultures that have no contact with one another sometimes come to remarkably similar divination systems.
Yeah.
Even if there's no like, oh, this came from this or that came from that. Mm-hmm. Like, playing cards is a perfect example of this. We don't always see a connection between two playing card systems, but we know that the playing cards we use as divination in both of those cultures. And that's very cool.
Yeah. I'm going to talking about cultures. I'm just going to pick one card, the Ace of Spades, and I'm going to give you what it means according to different systems. And this is from the book A Deck of Spells. So in Lenormand reading, the Ace of Spades is the significator card for a woman, any woman, and it means a lady of importance or power. That's French. There's a version from Kentucky in which the Ace of Spades means a strange bed, but I believe that's a euphemism for death. And in Illinois, the Ace of Spades means you will shortly attend a funeral. So those are cultural symbols that vary. Well, we could talk about this for years. Thank you, Balkan Diviner. You've taught us some new things about card reading I'd never heard of before.
Very interesting.
Yeah, wonderful conversation. And we'd like to have you on again, talking more perhaps about Balkan folk magic too. All right, we're going to turn this on over to Papa Newt.
Support for this programming is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line ran entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches, located online at crystalsilencely.org. Now it's time to go to our signups and take today's client. And today's client is actually coming from the chat, who is currently in the chat. I don't believe we were able to get them onto the stage, but this is Wick Way Is Up. And Wick Way Is Up writes, I want to sell a house in another state, and I will have a problem doing it from Florida, and others don't want the house to sell. Looks like I am a Sagittarius. They would like a reading and root work advice on the matter. And turn back to you, Miss Kat.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with the spells. I get to pick what I want to do and turn the reading over to Conjureman. Okay. And then he'll be followed by a reading from Balkan Diviner. And then I'll add some root work. So take it away, Conjureman.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. But we don't have Which Way Is Up on the
AI. No, we just have the text. I want to sell a house in another state and we'll have problem doing it from Florida, and others don't want the house to sell. I am a Sagittarius.
Okay. We do have them in chat.
However. We have them in chat. Okay. We know that they're a Sagittarius. Okay. That was an important question that I was going to ask you. So what I've actually done is, as I do for a lot of these, I always have a geomantic reading prepared using a set of geomantic shells that allows me to make the mothers very quickly. And then I can plug those mothers in and it produces the tableau pretty quickly for me. Otherwise, it takes a little bit to generate, because you have to count all these dots and reconfigure them. And as usual, I'm going to read just the judge in this matter so that we can get a very clear yes or no. And sometimes I add in the reconciler so that we know if there's something more. So the judge here is conjunctio, and conjunctio is about joining partnerships, alliances. On the whole, it is favorable and auspicious, and it does indicate here that the chances of selling this property are good, particularly because conjunctio is associated with contracts, with the signing of deals, with the signing of contracts, legal documents, sales documents, etc. So there is an indication here that you will be able to sell it. But conjunctio is a very mercurial figure. And so while it is auspicious, it can indicate a road that takes some time to get to and requires some assistance to achieve. Mercury here often indicates a figure that is benefic with the benefics and malefic with the malefics. It is a sort of a neutral ally that comes along with you. So what this indicates is you're going to need a very good agent. When conjunctio appears, it indicates partnerships, not just the contracts, but the alliances that you make. You need to have an agent that is very, very good, that will be able to handle any sort of legal difficulties that come your way, that can overcome any obstacles. They can even be good at convincing others that are hesitant. If, for example, it requires multiple people to come to an agreement about, hey, should we sell this property or not? You need this agent to do the heavy lifting for you. So you yourself shouldn't be at the forefront of this. You need to have someone else who's doing all the work. This is the person who needs to be contacting all the people who have some type of rights over this. It needs to be the person who signs all the contracts. It's the person who's then going to put it up on the market. It's the person who's going to negotiate when it's on the market. It's the person who's going to walk it through closing and so on and so forth. So this person needs to be at the forefront. You need to let Mercury lead here. And when you do that, you will be victorious. You will receive what you seek out of this. So the answer here is good. Now, I will note that conjunctio does pass to the fourth house, which tells me a very strong and affirmative yes. The fourth house is associated with property. It's associated with homes. And so the selling of homes here is good. It also, however, passes to the eighth house. And when it passes to the eighth house, it brings up a couple things. So I just want to clarify this. Is if this is a property that is associated with anyone that has passed away or that has died or anything along those lines, you should consider some type of cleansing for the property, some type of peaceful work for the property. This can be done at a distance, and Ms. Cat can walk you through how it is. If you can't get to the property because you're physically in a different state, Ms. Cat can walk you through some type of blessing work and whatnot for that property. But it can also indicate that there is less money than you may have hoped. So like at the end, there may be some extra things that you have to pay off. It could be a debt. It could be some type of tax bill, something that comes along that may end up taking just a little chunk out of it. Because it doesn't pass to the 12th house, I wouldn't say there's too many obstacles, but the 8th just makes me go, you should probably do some type of cleansing. Wickway is up, says no, there's no death associated with the house. Okay, that's great. But there is some type of, you know, like when you sell this, it may be for, you know, 50K less than you had hoped for. Some type of price, or it may end up having some type of tax bill, or, you know, the buyer wants you to add more to the closing cost. There's some type of hidden sunken cost associated with this. So some type of cleansing from a distance is recommended, some type of work to protect your money, something along those lines. So just be mindful that there is like this hiccup. There is an indication that you will be successful. There's an indication that this agent will help you be successful. But there's this hidden cost, a type of, you know, eating away of your money. And so be proactive about it. Protect your money and you will be victorious in the end.
All right. All right. Well, let's turn this over to Balkan Diviner. Are you going to read cards?
Yes, I've laid 5 cards for her situation. Okay. So what's interesting is that my reading resonates perfectly with what Counterman said. First, you have 3 red cards, which represents a probably yes after obstacles are overcome. In the center, so the 3rd card, would be the Queen of Spades, which is you. This is a woman who is in a position of difficulty. Therefore, you are indeed unable on your own to actually pull this through. But the next card, the 4th card, is the Queen of Hearts. So here I see a collaboration. Now, the Queen of Hearts in my reading can represent a trusted friend. It can also represent a supporter, and it can represent a root worker as well. So if you are looking to magically improve your situations, perhaps a root worker would help. Now, interestingly enough, you do have the Ace of Hearts in your reading, which is the 2nd card. The Ace of Hearts in Italian is called the Casa. And as Counterman said, it's caught between 2 spades. This to me indicates that indeed there are difficulties in selling this property, and there may be the need to cleanse and protect. The first card is the Two of Spades, which shows difficulty and a breakup or separation, and the energy of having obstacles in managing to break away from circumstances. But the last card is the King of Diamonds. Now, diamonds represent money, success, and indeed it can represent a real estate agent or perhaps the final buyer. But there is group effort here. With the Queen of Spades, the Queen of Hearts, and the King of Diamonds, there is indeed the notion that you need two helpers at least to help to aid you in selling this property. Now, I know I would like to share a small Italian trick actually that involves the Ace of Hearts. So in Italian folk magic, you'd slide an Ace of Hearts inside the frame behind the picture before you hang it on the wall on a house in order to protect it. But other than that, there is an indication of success here after proper collaboration and contact is made. There are going to be two individuals at least who aid you in recovering and actually selling this house. And they can be a trusted or known person and a professional, or they can be a root worker and a real estate professional.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to suggest some root work, but I've been asking in the chat and not getting an answer. I'm sorry, say that?
I said I just saw it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're going to give me an answer. I had prepared a long list of links to pages on cartomancy and forum threads on cartomancy, and I had intended for them to go through. I hope they will be inserted.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to take up the root work here. You can put those through while I talk. Okay. So I'm going to look at this from the standpoint of root work and getting a trusted agent. We know of various ways to work with spirits and angels for house selling. And I may have even talked with you about this, or I've certainly talked about it on the radio in the past, using Saint Joseph the Worker to prepare a house to sell. Now, if you can't be there, you can get your trusted agent to put a picture of Saint Joseph the Worker, and this would be Saint Joseph at his carpenter's bench, and put a picture of that in the house somewhere. If the house is stripped bare to the walls, you could put it in a closet just out of sight where no one would actually see it, possibly even face down. But you want to have that picture of Saint Joseph the Worker in the house with a prayer that the house sell well. And so these are old-fashioned ways of working, I guess you could say Catholic ways of working, but a lot of people have used this who are not Catholic. So that's the first thing I'd recommend for you. The other is I'd like you to have a photograph of the house, and I'm sure you can get that, and make a candle that you can make it be a half green and half yellow candle. You can use a white candle or a yellow candle or a green candle, whichever you like, and print out a picture of the house, and you can write around the picture the address, and then say, you know, please, you know, let this house be sold soon and profitably, but don't write over the house, just around it. And then you're going to dress that candle with some pay-me oil. You can use herbs that are good for contracts, like grains of paradise and maybe a little bit of tobacco and deer's tongue. Those are all good for contracts. Any of the court case herbs would be good for contracts. And pay me, and you also probably would want to also dress it with look me over oil. And so, and you could use Saint Joseph oil. Okay. So look me over is to have people come look at it. And of course, pay me is to have them pay you for it. And you can burn this candle straight through. It's always better to burn glass candles straight through. And that's what I would do. to get some, you know, get something going on with that. The other thing that you can do to make sure that the house sells is to put the picture of the house in a Bible at one of the Psalms. The usual Psalm would be Psalms 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And just put that picture in there and say, "Lord, bless this home, bless it for sale, and let it be sold quickly." If you prefer to use single individual candles rather than glass vigil lights, you can dress a series of small candles. You want to lay out 7 of them to make a cross shape. So that is going from you forward would be 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 1, 2, 3 across the middle. So that's 4 and 7. It just makes a cross. And that's a very old-fashioned way to lay out. It's called a cross of 7 candles. And you can light one every day of the week and pray for it to sell. If you're Christian, of course, that cross would be of use to you. If you're not Christian, you could try a circle of 7 candles, one for every day of the week, and just say, "May this house sell today. May this house sell today," until it sells. And you just go around, and when one candle is gone, these would be small candles, and when one candle is gone, you replace it with a new unlit ones. And you just keep on burning them one a day, all the way around and around. And those candles would also be dressed with "Look me over, pay me." You could also, if you wanted to, add house blessing oil to make the house good. Conjurman suggested that the house may need to be cleansed, and so house blessing oil would be a very nice addition. Mm-hmm. When you when the house finally is sold, burn one more circle of 7 or one more cross of 7. Shiva mentioned money house blessing. It's not what I was thinking, but money house blessing would work. Usually that's used for home businesses, but it would work too. But in any case, you would light one more row of 7 going around, and that would be done to seal the deal. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whenever you light one of these candles, you would put out a coin, and the coin would be for the poor, for the homeless, for those who need help making their rent or mortgage payments. So you might accumulate quite a number of coins as you go through this. And if you do it in a circle, you just go round and round and just put coins around each time you add more coins, and the coins make sort of a clock dial eventually, just sort of filled up 8 spokes of coins. So that's what I would do. So how about you guys? Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I could just add. I thought it was great. But one real quick technique for a cleansing here would be to take a picture of the house, lay out the picture of the house, put over it a cup of fresh water, and around it 4 white candles that you've dressed with blessing oil in a cross formation. Light each of the candles one by one in a clockwise fashion, and then recite Psalm 87, verse 1. "His foundation is in the holy mountains." As you light each of the candles, let this burn down. This will sort of cleanse any of the bad vibe, energy, spirit, etc. that might be there. That could be, you know, one of the reasons why it hampers the end result of how much money you're going to make.
That's really good. Psalms 81, verse 1, right?
87, verse 1.
87, yeah. Verse 1. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's a good one, too. Do you have anything to add, Balkan Diviner?
Looking at my reading, I just want to add that in case there may be subtle attachments that prevent the selling of this house, this is a more of a new way of thinking, the spiritual community. But this person might also benefit from, at the end of this, do a cut and clear spell, or even a road opening spell, and so forward, just so that inner work and healing is actually done, because the Queen of Spades can represent deep sadness, one way or the other.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to close out with a little bit of what we were talking about, cartomancy. The Nightbot has posted a lot of these links that I had hoped would go through earlier, but I'm going to name them. We have articles on cartomancy and playing cards. We have Hoodoo Rootwork Hours that have been on card reading in the past from 2015. We have shows on playing cards that ran in the Now You Know show for several weeks. Playing cards at AIR, the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, card suits, pip cards, court cards, and so forth, trump cards. All of these pages are free for you to use and read. And the audios will eventually all be put into video form. If you have favorite shows that you'd like to see us make into videos and upload, please contact us or through the YouTube channel and just say, yeah, please put that one up online and we'll do our best to get it ahead of time. All right, next comes our Tritone Network Identification and Schedule, followed by the Free Spell from Balkan Diviner.
LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance that brings you the best in hoodoo, conjure, witchcraft, rootwork, new thought, spiritualism, and pagan ways. Our shows include the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, live on Sundays from 3 to 4:30 Pacific Time. The Crystal Silence League Hour, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, and the Now You Know Show. All these shows are available as audio podcasts via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com. and at YouTube, where we make daily video uploads. Please like and subscribe at youtube.com/LuckyMojoCurioCo. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, makers of handcrafted spiritual supplies and offering the widest selection of magical herbs and roots, plus hundreds of free web pages filled with spellcasting tips and fortune-telling techniques. Our shop is located in Forestville, California, and we sell retail and wholesale online at LuckyMojo.com.
And here is a list of this coming up week's network video upload schedule. Do pay attention to videos being uploaded daily, which on Monday we will have The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron episode 4 on Isis. On Tuesday, we'll have the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rubric Hour, which was from May 29th of 2022, which on signs, movements, and resolution in spell work. On Wednesday, the Crystal Silence League Hour, episode 19, Wake Up with Ron Marty Shank. Thursday, on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, episodes 168, will be on Abundance and Prosperity. Friday, the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rubric Hour, episode on that was aired on June 23rd of 2019, which is Mediterranean Folk Magic. And then on Saturday, the Crystal Silence League Hour, episode 20, Chakras and Crystals, part 1. And now it's time for our free spell segment with Balkan Diviner, a Balkan Diviner on Facebook in Romania. Take it away, Balkan Diviner.
Thank you very much. So I've designed a road opening playing card spell. You need the following playing cards: the Three of Hearts, the Three of Clubs, and the Three of Diamonds. Number 3 is associated with growth, creativity, and collaborations. Three of Hearts speaks about happiness and creativity. Three of Diamonds about building prosperity or a financial pyramid. And Three of Clubs about attracting connections, networking, progress, and development. You can use an orange candle. That's traditionally for road opening, yellow candle for happiness, and green candle for financial growth. Each card can serve as a petition paper. On the Three of Hearts, you'd write, happiness comes to me. On the Three of Diamonds, you'd write, money comes to me. And on the Three of Clubs, you write, opportunities come to me. Anoint the candles and petition papers with a combination of blessing, crown of success, and road opening oil. But you can also use money drawing oil. You can burn the candles in section or all at a time. Dispose of the remains by burying them in your front yard if you live in a home, or throw them in the east to draw beautiful things towards yourself. Keep the cards close to you, to your working space, and you can also reuse them or put them in an altar. The candles can be either tea lights or pillar candles. It can vary, to be honest.
Okay.
I'd also recommend praying Psalm 23 in this regard, which is phenomenal for new avenues.
Okay. Wow. So this kind of card spell is very powerful work. And again, I do want to recommend the book, A Deck of Spells by Professor Porterfield, which has a spell for every candle. A spell for every card. And this work that you're doing is very complex, but using the cards as a representation of what you wish to do or what you wish to get is excellent, because all of the cards have meanings. So once you learn the meanings of the cards, you can use them for all kinds of work. And that's kind of the basis of playing card magic. Do you have anything to add to this, Conjurman?
I thought this was a really great example of how you can combine candles, playing cards, petitions. Really well thought out, builds gorgeous symbolism through the combination of both. But again, reminds us that a lot like the tarot, the playing cards can be actively used in magical works and operations and spells and conjurations, and has been for hundreds of years. It's a really cool aspect about the playing cards, is because it has this built-in symbolism already. You can tap into it. So you're not just divining, you're actively changing your future. You're actively changing your fate using the cards. And I really love that.
Yeah. We have a couple of minutes here, so I'm going to add a couple of other ideas. This goes back to some older things. Remember, Balkan Diviner mentioned burying the cards if they misbehave. There's an old spell from a practitioner in Illinois who told Reverend Harry Hyatt, a folklorist, that you can sprinkle red pepper on your playing cards to burn the bad luck off of them. So you just, it's again to punish them. You put red pepper on them, then you shake it all off. Of course, be careful with your hands. Don't wipe your eyes after that. Also, a spell that is an old one from 1938 from Memphis, and Reverend Hyatt collected this one, is to take a King, Queen, Jack, and 10 of diamonds, all of them diamonds, and tack them up over the door and burn incense and clean the room with lye water, and you will win at illicit gambling and can safely sell illicit whiskey in that room. So that's a great one. It's just the court cards and the 10. And tack them up over the door. So there are lots of these kinds of wonderful spells that come from our past of how to use cards together. And there is our music.
Great show.
It's a wonderful show. Thank you, Balkan Diviner. And thank you for bringing us so much interesting folk magic from another part of the world, something we just didn't know. Let's turn this over to Papa Newt, and he will take us out of here.
Thank you, Miss Kat and Conjure Man. And thank you, Balkan Diviner of Balkan Diviner on Facebook in Romania, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week, when our special guest will be Ethan Nickel of MyselfInCards.com in Fullerton, California, bringing us the topic on reversing spells. Once again, we come to an end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Kat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and ConjureMan at ConjureManConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, Papa Newt, joining you from PapaNewt.com in Omaha, Nebraska. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on YouTube live stream at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available at YouTube at youtube.com/LuckyMojoCurioCo. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to say thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at the same time, when you'll hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
All right. Well, I just want to again thank Balkan Diviner for what I call foreign folklore.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
Yeah, you're really great. So, folks, get your friends to subscribe to the Lucky Mojo Curio Co. YouTube channel. We are aiming for 2,000 people. Come on. We need more subscribers. Now, I guess I have one more thing to say, and that's just about the money to turn everything into YouTube videos. It's not free, folks. Hey, did you think it was free? Nah, it's not free. So in order to keep Andre and Deacon Millet in bread rolls, we do need a little bit of help from our fans and friends and contributors here. I devote my Patreon money to helping, but we also have a button, a donation button you can go to, and I'm sure it'll be in the chat, and you can just donate $5. We would be so happy. It'll help us succeed with this project. All right, everybody, good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.